What can't you afford to do anymore, Ryan?
Yeah, what does modern society prevent you from doing, Ryan?
I can't afford disclosing things on podcasts anymore. Get sued.
Ryan is not doing his job as per the hunter-gatherers.
Not spreading his ginger seed around.
Not enough.
You could argue there's, with how little ginger people there, not they're small, there's not many out there, that we're definitely as a collect, what would you call it? A gathering.
A race. This is what you're trying to establish, isn't it?
Do you want to say your tribe?
A tribe, yeah, of gingers. We could be called a tribe. It should be a collective name.
That's your duty. That's the whole hunter-gatherer mentality. It's your duty as the male to make sure that your seed is spread in as many different people as possible for your genes to continue. How do you feel about your genes not?
Women. I could spread them in men, but it wouldn't have the same impact from a continuation of the gene pool.
And you said society won't really allow you to make it thus. You have to pay for them, but damn it.
Yeah, you have to pay for children that you spawn nowadays. You can't just get away with it. So,
oh, the good old
just get away with it.
Blooming society messing us up. You know what that is? That's women in power. That's what that is.
Ryan Pearcey, I've got HR on line one for you.
It was in that moment Ryan knew he'd f***ed up.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Digitools and the Cruel World podcast. It's great as always to welcome you and update you with news. And we've got another great interview with someone in the tech space as well. And of course, this is pretty much going to be the last episode of 2023. We hope you all had a great Christmas and a great new year. And we will, of course, be back for 2024. I'm delighted to say that joined by Daniel Lawrence from Bots for That to tell us all things around robotic process automation and why he's decided that this is a thing that SMEs need access to. We've also found out just now as well that he doesn't like the phrase AI. So we'll try and throw that as much as possible into the conversation because that is basically the only thing in 2023 that anyone's wanted to talk about. Without further ado, Daniel, could you just give us a little bit about your background and how you came into this automation space, what prompted that, and why in particular you're targeting the SME sector?
Definitely. So I prefer IA, intelligent automation. So we'll come back to that. So we started the company, actually 2012. We got a background in shared services, accounting. Accounting is my trade, my craft, which I learned a long time ago. And from there, I worked at quite a large number of organizations, some pretty big hitters on the technical scene. From there, went into shared services. And from there, something called robotic process automation burst onto the scene. We had a little play with it and thought, this is the future. Forget shared services. This is where it's going to be. This is the new lever that companies will pull in the future in order to get more productivity, efficiency, and cost effectiveness out of their resources and their operations. So that's how we all started. The whole purpose of the company, the vision was make work better. That was basically it in a nutshell.
Cool. There'll be some of our listeners that have probably never heard of robotic process automation. So very quickly, what is that?
Actually, we never use those terms. We never use RPA. We never use acronyms like that. It's all about making work better. But basically, robotic process automation is a technology that came on the scene about 2015 and went mainstream. It was the love child of three main technologies, screen scraping, workflow, and NLP, natural language processing, which allows how we communicate and how computers communicate to be merged in, and so that one can understand the other and vice versa. Those three came together and created effectively a platform that became a more usable way for non-technical people to create automations. Although it's evolved a hell of a lot as a technology, but it's still not at the level where anyone can build anything.
Yeah, I remember when RPA hit the accountancy sector, maybe not as far back as 2015, but I definitely remember when everyone was talking about it. Oh, we need to be doing it. And then there was a lot of talk and nothing happened. So my question is, why now? Why do you think now's the right time to really dive into there?
It's funny, I was reading a book recently and it was someone did an analysis of the most successful companies over the last like 20 years. And you know what the number one reason that came out was? It wasn't management. It wasn't a great product idea. It wasn't all the things you'd expect. And the number one reason that came out for most companies being the most successful was timing. In a nutshell, that is it. I know ChatGPT has hit the airwaves recently, right? But we've had generative AI technology for decades. We've had AI algorithms for the last 60 years. We're just grappling now. We're just coming to the point where we can actually stick it on a desktop and let users play with it. It's become accessible, affordable, extendable to the point where anyone can really get their hands on it. Whether they should is another matter. And there's lots of moral dilemmas in there, business dilemmas and ethical dilemmas to solve. Certainly the data ones is something I hear a lot, especially in accounting firms, is our clients will never go for this. Our partners will never go for this. All very valid concerns and things that we do need to, as an industry, grapple with and get solutions to and find a way forward for it.
Cool. So give us some tangible examples. I've seen one recently about what you're doing with Zero Bank Rick, but what is it that is actually happening?
What's happening? The brilliant systems that the accountants have at their disposal now, they're still built for a big lump of flesh to sit behind a screen and interact with, right, and drive things. That's still the nature of it. It's like a bus. It's not self-driving. You actually have to have someone sitting there driving matters along. So what happens is that still creates a manual workload, a debt. It requires people to do things, make decisions, click buttons, especially buttons. So there's a lot of button pressing still going on, right? So what we noticed was if we take our bots are quite smart and intelligent in so much as they can connect with systems without actually being embedded into them. They don't need to be integrated in. They just sit on the outside like a virtual person in their own little desktop. But they can connect with those systems in the same way a person does. So it makes it very quick and easy and secure. What they can also do is connect and do their work through the screens at the user interface level in the same way a person does. So it makes it easy for people to understand what a bot's doing, how it's working. But it can also connect through the back end, through an API, for example, and connect up in a much faster way than we can. So it gives you a lot of flexible ways that you can connect up. And what we've found is all those manual tasks, they're usually very sequential, very logical. They're very deterministic. So you can write a program, you can build a bot around all those series of tasks. It can be incredibly sophisticated and very multi-leveled. You can have thousands of lines of decision points, but you can build it very quickly and it can operate just as fast. So you can build that to take away those manual, repetitive, deterministic tasks and activities. And you can do that with basic bots. If you really want to get sophisticated though and start throwing some sort of machine learning algorithms onto that, and there's loads of those. So again, we've had those for decades, but you can incorporate those to do really clever things. You mentioned our bank rec bot there. We've done that, for example. There's an algorithm called the Fuzzy Wuzzy, right? It's a genuine thing. I'm not lying. Look it up. And it's basically, if I've got two character sets, left and right, one A and B, how many characters do I have to remove from one of them for it to be a match with the other? And you set that at a confidence level then. So if it's two characters and you want an 80% confidence level for that to be considered a match, you can imagine the application for a bank rec bot in that situation, right? Where you can say it's the same payee, it's the same month, it's the same value. What other data points can you match in that fuzzy wuzzy way? Then you can do as many data points as you like. We've actually used the same kind of algorithms to do AML checks and duplicate account checks in lots of industries, and you can get a very high hit rate and you can set the level that you want to be comfortable at. So in the bank rec world, you can match items very quickly, but also very confidently that they're the right ones. Sometimes, and I dare say it, and I hope no one from Xero is listening, but sometimes you can do it more accurately than Xero does, because we all know that it doesn't always get it 100% right. Not that we always will, just saying.
That's one of the great things of using something like an algorithm, though, isn't it? It will only ever get better. We're using Fuzzy Wuzzy in our firm, data cleansing in our practice management system at the moment, and it's a great system. I think you guys that use UiPath for quite a lot of your bots, are you just predominantly using them, or are you using a multitude of different platforms?
Because we've been doing this for just over 6 years now, we did it when UiPath was about 1 year or so on the scene. The dominant player back then was Blue Prism. They were number one in the world. In fact, they had been the originators of RPA. They'd brought it to market when the guys left Barclays. And there were probably about 6 or 7 other players at the space. There's probably 600 or 700 players now, just 6 years later. It's a phenomenal growth rate. It was the fastest growing software segment in the world about 2 years ago. So there's been a lot of consolidation. There's been a lot of cancellations and a few deaths as well. And it's UiPath now the number one. They probably still have the leading enterprise-grade platform. We've had to take that and create a business model around it for ourselves to make it work for SMEs, because very few SMEs are going to be able to afford a license that the UiPaths of the world will sell, and you won't get the use out of it. So we found a way of making it accessible, pay for what you really need to use.
And how does that contrast with things like Power Automate or Zapier, which a lot of accountants will be much more familiar with?
I don't really like to use the term, but you could think of bots for that as the sort of the managed service version of Zapier. Zapier has some restrictions in as much as it's mostly API based. There's a lot of stuff that is not working are on APIs. There are a lot of things that APIs don't exist for, even when they don't necessarily do everything that you need. Aged AR and AP on Xero is a prime example. There is no API for that. So you've got to use UI automation to do that. Doing things like that with Zapier is not always an option. And then you will find that there will be limitations with those low code tools to what you can really achieve. And you find that for £99 a month, you might be able to do 20% of this, but for an extra £100 more, you might be able to do 99% of it. So the return on investment for the little extra, where you get that full enterprise grade power, is probably worth looking at.
So you're already doing, I guess, the bank rec side. What other areas are you looking at or focusing on in that small business?
Dozens, especially in the accounting practices. So we started out by making and forging links with accounting practices from solopreneurs with a bookkeeper of just maybe 10, 20 clients up to top 30, 40 practices in the UK and a few in between. So we ended up with about eight partners in total. And we told them really clearly what we wanted to do. We're bringing this new product to market. We want it to be all about bookkeeping and accounting. We want to make work better. We want to give you the tools that make you more productive, efficient, profitable, but also give you more options and more choice. So we started working with them and understanding, where are your pains today? Where do you spend most of your work? What's the average life cycle per client per month? How many people do you have to sign to a client? How many transactions? Just building up a picture.
Daniel, what did they say though? What was their pain points? Because I guess every accounting, the account firms can be different. So was it credit control? Was it?
Do you know what? I thought it was going to be more varied than it really was. But from the very smallest to the very largest, it was pretty much the same, which is we have to do loads of this bookkeeping stuff. There's loads of this day-to-day work that just has to be done, clicking green buttons and so on and so forth, running those reports. The thing is, they didn't really look at it as pain. We had to walk through their processes. They don't see it as pain. They see it as life, which is quite disturbing, right? Because it's funny how comfortable people can get doing crappy stuff.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable how comfortable we can get really quickly.
It's the aim, that entire process, right? From originating documentation, getting into the system, make sure it's in the right place. There might be some sense check that humans might want to do top end, but you need to do the bank process and the portal thing. That entire end-to-end process is your goal.
It's a bot for everyone, yeah.
Cool. And so how are you pricing this? Have you got a pricing model that you're working towards? Have you got a structure?
We do, yeah. We looked at a lot of different ideas, right? But ultimately what it comes down to is a bot, in terms of output of a bot per person, you'll get somewhere in the region of 5 to 10 times the output for a bot for the same amount of time as a person. So if one person does 1 hour of work, the output will be the equivalent of 5 to 10 times for a bot. It'll work obviously much faster. If it's following a set of rules, it's not going to make mistakes. It's not going to come in with a hangover. It's not going to have a grumpy day. It's not going to have COVID. It's not going to take holidays.
Work through the night.
All that kind of stuff. Yeah, and that's a great point because a lot of our bots do get scheduled. So you don't actually have to be there to run it. With a front-end app where you've got your dashboard, you can see all the bots that you've got scheduled across all the different processes. And if you're running a bot, you run it for every client you've got. So if you're running the bank rec bot, you set it up to run overnight for every single client you've got, which means you come in the morning, everything's assigned that can be. You've got your list of exceptions. The report has been prepared and it's been sent to you or the client directly to follow up.
So are you charging per client?
We're just charging a flat rate for run times. Just keeping it simple. Okay. We wanted to get away from the per client basis, which is obviously a lot of other models that are out there that do that sort of thing. If we've got in a year's time 1,000 bots, you can pick, choose and refuse any of the bots that you want. Pick the ones you want to use, leave the ones you don't. You've got 4 hours of runtime on the basic per week. You've got 8 on the next one, then 12.
So you're building up like a marketplace of bots that people could go pick and choose as they need, and exactly. Your price based on runtime. That's cool. Yeah. So,
can I ask you a quick question, Daniel? Do you as a business want to focus on solving the problems that the cloud accounting accountants or businesses have? Or are you happy to solve the problems that the desktop accounting practices and desktop accounting businesses still have? Because there is always this kind of lingering question mark about RPA tools in particular, that they're just fixing problems that could be fixed in other ways, particularly if you use newer technology.
Mm. That's a good one, right? Because it's a bit of a double-edged sword, right? Because if we get asked to look at a process, people are so much more comfortable if you present what we call a lift and shift. So that's how it's done today. That's how it'll be done tomorrow by the bot. They get that. They can reconcile. Okay, brilliant. I understand what's happening. They're less worried. But ultimately, whenever we automate a process, we always try to move and improve it. Because ultimately, things work better set up a certain way when you're a bot versus a person. We're not bound by some of the restrictions that we have as a person. We don't have to have the same sort of authentication to log in. We're much more secure. It can set its own password, 64 characters or whatever you want it to be. So there's an argument for both. Ultimately, we do which one the business feels most comfortable with. We like to solve the problem as well as automate it. We have the framework I've had for forever, I've always used, is ESSA. Eliminate, simplify, standardize, automate. And I try to always bake that into what we do. Some people aren't ready for the first three, so we just automate. But ultimately, we're trying to build solutions that people can just, you know, pick, choose, and refuse and say, yeah, that'll work for us. That won't. We'll leave that, but take the rest. And the bots that we build, although they're standardized, they're also customizable. So there's elements of it. And you can pick, choose, and refuse what you want that bot to do as well.
You're relatively new to me. I've just seen you come to the market. And I think we're going to see a lot more of you from what you're talking about, what you're trying to do in the industry. But for anyone that's listening that does want to learn a bit more or reach out or find out how, I guess, Bots for That is changing how accounting is run, how do they get in contact with you, Danny?
Easy. Daniel at botsforthat.com. We've got the website, botsforthat.com. We're going to be at DAS next year. News to come in the new year about what that's going to look like. We were at DAS this year on a much smaller level, an introductory level. But next year we're going big or we're going home.
Daniel, thank you for coming on. I appreciate
no worries.
Making some time.
I'm having a lot of fun with this elf thing on the shelf.
What was the last one?
The elf had a blowout party with the Barbie dolls and they spread gingerbread everywhere.
Jesus. They weren't, one wasn't snorting.
That sounds like Ryan. No one wants to see Ryan spreading his gingerbread around.
No one does. Apart from, I don't know, talking about my ginger seed a second ago. Jesus.
Yeah, we were encouraging it. Well, why are you trying to put him back in his box? We're saying spread away, because obviously it's all about...
I don't want to think about Ryan's box. Thank you very much. We could do a Christmas quiz.
Is it a quiz that's been set by Love Honey? I just need to caveat and know the answer.
It's big, black, 6 inches round.
Oh, God. A reindeer's antler?
It's Ryan's Christmas present. A reindeer's antler. Oh, yikes. What is the name of the skyscraper in Die Hard 1?
I don't
know. Nakatomi Tower.
Oh, God.
What is the Grinch's loyal dog's name?
Oh. I was watching this yesterday. I can't remember what it's called.
Toto.
Go on then, what is it?
Maz. Who plays Ebenezer Scrooge in The Muppets Christmas Carol?
Oh. God, I have no idea.
Don't know.
Michael Caine.
Oh, I was thinking of an actual Muppet.
Yeah, we went to the same brain, Ryan. Same brain.
He's the only non-Muppet character in A Muppet's Christmas Carol. Pretty much.
Sorry. I feel like a Muppet right now, John.
What is this?
Like Bert and Ernie.
John is lovingly entitled this episode, Ryan's Pig is in a Blanket.
Yeah, I've got on there more recently. You have been renaming them to annoying things. To change
That's
them.
It's quite funny.
In what country is it traditional to eat KFC for Christmas dinner?
America? China?
Oh, you're getting Russia. Closer.
No, it's going to be in ancient Japan.
Yes.
That's it. Well, that 5 minutes of banter is too much. We've gone past.
Yeah, it's too much. Sorry. Cut from here.
The guys at Free Agent have introduced a smart capture. So this is adding on to Auto Extract, which has been around in the product for a long time. And with smart capture, you've now got the ability to upload files via the desktop version of Free Agent, as well as the mobile app. And you can also upload things like PDF files and do that both individually, which you could do previously, but in bulk as well. So that's a new set of features they're bringing in. And then what will happen is a standard OCR kind of thing. They'll extract the information. It'll be automatically matched to a bank transaction if they can do, or converted to an expense. And they'll also try and suggest what categories or nominal code that should go to, if that's the instance that you're using. You can process 10 receipts per month as standard within your standard subscription. And then if you have more than that to process, then you can use Smart Capture Unlimited, which is an additional £5 plus VAT per month. And then that's a completely unlimited package that you can use. That's a good sweet spot for the kind of target market initially in terms of the freelancer consultancy type world, where you're probably not in receipt of a large number of invoices and things that you need to process, but obviously then starting to cater for the larger end of the market, which is certainly where Free Agent seems to be moving towards.
And I've got something from Free Agent as well. They have launched the general public Free Agent for Landlords, We announced on a previous pod they had developed free agent for landlords, but only given access to accountants. That is now available to the general public. And for those of you that don't know what free agent for landlords is, it meets the needs of unincorporated landlords who earn income through property. And this is whether you have an individual property or a property portfolio. You can track your income and expenditure per property and automate a number of that by basically having recurring transactions or rules that allocates it into where it needs to go based on the transaction information that comes into the system. And then from that, once you've got all the information in, submit to your self-assessment tax return directly to HMRC. So it was pretty good when it was great news when it was released. The fact that now released it to the general public beyond just accountants, I think, is a good sign.
Stepping away from that for a moment, this is a structural change for a company, given that we have just seen the drama that unfolded with OpenAI and Sam Altman and his chairman. FreshBooks have also made some structural changes, slightly less dramatic, but it is Don Epperson, their CEO, and their president, Mark Given, who will be stepping back from the business. And the board has now appointed interim co-CEOs, which is interesting. I don't know if I've seen many examples of where co-CEOs have worked really well together, but I'm quite excited to see what happens. So the board has appointed Mara Reef and Wayne Jackson as interim co-CEOs, and they've also engaged a search firm to look for a new CEO. For Don, that's a 5-year stint, and for Mark, that's a 9-year stint. And this is something that will be a transitional period for FreshBooks as they enter into what they're calling the startup winter.
Startup winter?
Yeah.
Why is this? Not much is happening.
Yeah, a winter in startup land.
I can only assume that means that there's not many startups because the funding has come out of the market. So it's been chilly trying to get funding to launch. I was hoping for some goss there, Indy. I was hoping that you're going to say there were some affairs that went on or a big fight in the office, but it sounds like just they're there for a while and they decided to move on, you know.
But we don't know. We don't know.
We should talk to Mara
and we should talk to, sorry, I've only remembered Mara's name. We're going to talk to Mara.
Sorry, Dwayne.
No, it's not even Dwayne, it's Wayne, Ryan.
Oh, damn it. Sorry, Wayne.
Sorry.
On that, over to John.
Thanks, guys. Yeah, iPlicit ran a webinar covering off some of the feature highlights and things that they've rolled out in 2023. And they also touched on some of the things that we could expect to see in 2024. So just a quick recap. They launched some accounts payable automation around the product. They've improved the fixed asset modules. So that's much more functional. And so those people maybe that are familiar with how that works and things like Xero, QuickBooks and stuff, it'll feel much more familiar to you. They've also improved the way that you can handle things like intercompany transactions and made that a little bit easier to deal with. Anyone that moves to a product like iPlicit tends to be multi-entity, and obviously dealing with intercompany transactions, charges, etc. is something that we know a few products out there are trying to fix, and iPlicit have brought that into their product as well. There are also some general enhancements around the way that archive data is handled, and one of the things that iPlicit are quite unique at is that you can bring across, for example, historic data from a previous account system mapped to that chart of accounts and then effectively remap it into your new chart of accounts in iPlicit. They have also brought out a whole suite of additional automations and integrations. So they've improved how the API operates and you can actually manage attachments and document management. It's a little bit easier and also call on that API. They launched a whole host of Zapier connectors, which means, again, you've just got additional functionality for those who are happy to zap. And they also have integrated with BSyncly, which is a platform that enables folk integrations and also plugs into things like WooCommerce, Freshdesk, eBay, and a whole host of other platforms like Magento, Amazon, etc. So they've got that ability to also do the e-com online trading type side of things, which is always challenging to manage within a product. And then looking forward to 2024, they're hoping to launch a partner portal, which will enable people like us, accountants, to see have greater visibility of our clients that are using the product. They're also going to be launching some open banking payment products and hoping to do some automatic work for cost allocation as well, which will help with managing day-to-day records.
Done a lot, haven't they? And they've got a lot coming. I would say iPlicit must be one of the similar to what FreeAgent done, most developments recently in the kind of core accounting platforms.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Yeah.
And they're winning lots of awards, aren't they, as well, recently?
It's easy to win awards nowadays, and they just turn up. But what was that integration tool you said, John?
B-Syncly.
I've not come across that, but the connections it's got sound interesting. I think I'm going to have to follow up on that. A quick one from TaxCalc. They have now released FRS 102 reporting formats for LLPs. Now, this has come on the back of a large demand from their client base, where they've seen a growing number of LLPs. I assume this is from incorporating of standard partnerships, although I believe there's a number of LLPs that have also been moving to limited companies as well. And they've reported a big growth in this area, hence why they've released this. And I believe it's in their FRS 102 medium and large accounts product, something that you have to pay extra for, although it's not entirely clear from the release.
It's a little one as well from me. Knowit have released a new mobile app. So Knowit is the credit control solution, and now you can download or use the app to receive live credit management updates. You can see things like customer changes to customers' credit reports, alerts to potential customer risks, including liquidations or insolvencies, or updates on commercial debt recovery cases on the go. I think that this is an interesting move. I don't really understand why you would need it to that level of detail or granularity. So it sort of feels like tech for tech's sake. Oh, it sounds awful to say that. For those people who have a lot of different cases open, I'm sure it will be useful. How relevant it is, a change to your credit score versus the customers that you're working with. Blah. I don't know. I think the main thing is that you just want to help the businesses get paid a lot quicker and get the money a lot quicker. So I don't know if this is really just death by information.
It's only death by information if it's overwhelming, right? And the key thing with all of these things is how they're presented and if they're contextual. I'm a big fan of seeing credit data against your live ledger balances and things. And also there's a few other apps that are doing this in the market, but it's got to be done in a way that's consumable, because if it isn't, it doesn't help you to target the balances that are most at risk. Moving on to an Excel update. Can you believe this? We're doing Excel now. We are accountants, so it's got to be a given at some point.
Excel's in the cloud, isn't it? Surely we can cover it.
It is in the cloud, yeah. So as a user, if you're in the beta channel, you now have two new functions. You have the ability to either group by or pivot by, which effectively allow you to simulate pivot tables, but can go a lot further than that. Because they're formula-based, you can choose how the output works, and you can also do things like comma-separated lists, a few other things that you couldn't do. Plus, of course, the one slightly frustrating thing about pivot tables, if you're a user, is they don't auto-update or refresh when you change the data in the model. And of course, because this is being driven by array functionality in a formula, this will automatically update as you add to a series of data or change things in the data. So that's pretty cool. And you can also then change how the outputs work as well, because it doesn't have to be driven by particular numbers of things. You can also combine text and numbers and add the ability to sort, filter, etc. On top of this, you can, of course, do some of that with a pivot table, but it's a bit more challenging. This functionality looks pretty slick and pretty cool from what I've seen so far.
Spotlight Reporting, the guys behind the forecasting and reporting software, have launched Spotlight Sustain, which is a new way to turn your data into visually engaging ESG reports. You're able to measure what matters most when it comes to ESG and also do that in something that looks quite powerfully, quite sexy, actually, some of the images on the website. So you can assess it and improve environmental impact, things like carbon emissions and strategies, carbon offset investment strategies, environmental initiatives and investments. You can analyze and track social performance indicators in terms of diversity, employee experience, client treatment, employee training and development plans, and then also the governance side and reporting on workplace health and safety, financial transparency, regulatory compliance and risk management, as well as ethical business practices and company policies.
Wow, that covers a lot. I expected it just to be CO2 or something, but that seems to be quite a lot in the app. And the fact that the reporting apps are getting directly involved rather than what we've seen, which is new reporting apps spring out the market that's trying to cover all this area, is promising, because it's showing that we can do all the financial, non-financial reporting all in one area, which is good. And I'd like to play with it at some point. I think it's quite a good release. I've got a big one from Payhawk. Now, if you're unsure who Payhawk are, they are a card payment system that integrates directly into the finance ledgers, similar to Plio, Soldo, Moss, those kind of systems. They have now launched their new purchase order system. So you can do purchase request approvals, three-way matching, and the ability to pay in local and or cross-border transfers in one seamless platform. Now, this is pretty positive from my aspect because I think Payhawk's card facility was really good. Yeah, it was pretty promising price point. Went and basically wanted to said, guys would love this. You just need some purchase orders in there. I said, it's coming. And it has. It's turned up. It has turned up just before Christmas and had a Christmas present from Payhawk. And something that I would advise checking out.
And something else which we briefly touched on earlier in that news was about e-invoicing. And Germany have decided to postpone the implementation or the mandation of e-invoicing and move that back to January 2027. So they bought German businesses a little bit more time. Part of that was down to a compromise because the delay was initially looking to be 2 years, but they've agreed on 1 year. And what that means is that effectively paper invoices will now be phased out in Germany from the 1st of January 2027, although there are some exemptions for small businesses under €800,000 turnover. And effectively, things like unstructured PDFs as well will also be phased out at that point in time. And then the ability to utilize e-invoices using the PEPL standard will be rolled out and expected to be used from 2025. Interestingly, one of the things that did also come out of this was that the German parliament have agreed to stick with EDI, which is an electronic data interchange, which is an e-invoicing standard that doesn't meet European standards, but is utilized quite regularly across retail. And they've said that can continue to be utilized so long as the buyer agrees to that. So this may be something that we'll start to see as a bit of a nuanced thing coming maybe into the UK as e-invoicing does roll out across Europe, and possibly we might see other delays. I suspect, and this is only conjecture, but I suspect that this may be linked to something else because the German parliament had expected to have a windfall of something like 600 million euros to spend on various projects, which was coming out of another budget elsewhere. And they had a Supreme Court judgment against them utilizing that funding to implement a whole host of things, which was surrounding digitalization and green economy measures. And I suspect this might have fallen foul of that as a consequence.
Makes sense. I do wonder if this is going to be the start of Germany's MTD equivalent. Everything gets pushed back and pushed back and pushed back. I hope not. I think e-invoicing is a massive positive, big step in the future for a digital economy. And I really hope that it doesn't get pushed back because the fact that Europe are doing this streaming ahead will likely drag the British Parliament along with it because we don't seem very proactive in this space and present. On that, to wrap this up, we have a brilliant statement from the government about the digital pound, and the MPs have said we should proceed with caution because why wouldn't we? Which basically means we can't make a decision as yet, so let's just push it down the road. Now, there is a plan that maybe by the middle of the decade, there could be a design phase and a currency could be launched before 2030, but I wouldn't hold my breath on it. They've said there's a lot of potential benefits, but there's a lot of risks and they can't decide if the benefits outweigh the risks at this point. So whether we'll see a digital British pound in the near future backed by the Bank of England, who's to know? But to put this in context, only 11 countries in the world have released a digital pound as yet. But there are 130 countries that are exploring it. So could we see a completely digital currency by the middle of the century? Very possibly. Who knows?
Good news. I like the fact that the short term is like 5 to 6 years away or whatever it is. It's just ridiculous.
It is.
A nut.
A nut of gingers.
How about a strawberry blonde of gingers?
Yeah, that works. Yeah, or just a strawberry. A punnet. A punnet of gingers.
Punnet of gingers.
I like that one, a punnet of gingers.
Shall we do bed by bin then? How do you introduce bed by bin?
There's a little jingle, and then there's a chant.
Whoop, 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 whoop.
And then there's a special handshake.
And then there's what?
A special handshake. Special handshake. Oh, it's like a virtual handshake.
Wow, okay. Well, it's like bed by bin. I thought it'd be more than a handshake.
Actually, it depends on whether you're the winner or not.
If you're in the bin, then no.
As we head into 2024, what accounting conferences are we going to go to? Because there's blooming loads at the start next year.
That's right. I reckon Accountex for sure.
I can't go. I can't go to Accountex. I'm on holiday.
But it is a lot of fun. Last year
is a massive one.
Great.
It was epic. John will just have to drink twice as much to cover for me now.
Oh dear. He already drank too much last year. I think we're going to walk around Accountex. Do some interviews, John. Have an event, pre-event. So,
yeah, we've got a pre-event event in the mix. It's already in the planning, so that should be announced in the new year, which will be exciting.
Oh, I love the pre-event events. How many times can we get event in the term before we're into scrapping for these?
Then, are you guys going to ZeroCon? Texas in May,
yep.
And ZeroCon is a month after, in June.
Yes,
I believe it's in June, yes. They're hoping for not quite as much heat as they had a couple of years ago. Cooler one. And I think it's back where it was before, isn't it?
Not in old Billingsgate.
No.
It's at the XL.
It's back where originally was for a number of years.
I think that's going to make it a little bit less interesting and exciting. Because the XL is a big box venue.
I think they dress up the XL when they've done it in the past really well. And I think it works really well for them because they can move you around. Whereas... obviously, the last time they did it, the venue was challenging. It was an interesting venue, but I think it just didn't quite work for everyone involved. And the challenge was as well that they had the after party in a completely different place, which meant that people had to schlep around London to get there. Whereas you do it all in one place under one roof and you just basically go pretty much next door into the next meeting room area for the after party.
Do you think Sukhinder will be joining this year?
I hope so.
Me too. And then, so that's not until May and June, but what comes in the months before? February, March, April?
So we've got QuickBooks Connect in end of February. They've not actually fully released it from what I can tell. I don't think you can actually sign up for it yet, but they're advertising that it's called Get Connected on the 27th of February. So we'll see. In the past, they've had
snow.
Sure,
that's not an open reach event.
Open reach. Given that QuickBooks have made the most announcements, feature releases, a bit more innovation. I think that would be a really good one to go to learn a bit more, but probably not in your forte.
I've been there before. I've been to QuickBooks Connected a couple of times. It's good. It's just time of year means you can get hit by the weather and it can have a big impact. Yeah, hopefully it'll be a good one. But then after that, you've got the London. That's all I've said.
London.
It's just in London.
Just London.
Typical generic. Americans, that is. It's like that's it. It's the entire country. That is, it's London.
Yeah.
Everyone can attend it.
Even the Queen will be there, and everyone will know her.
And then we've got what, alternative events in March?
Like end of February, early March, isn't it? I think as well. If I remember rightly.
That's a good one.
At the same time.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit after QuickBooks normally, and it's a good event. Usually, get to stay over, and there's a lot that goes on in that. I've been to some, and they can have the most interesting discussions because they've got round tables. And something I know that Digital Currency Show is looking to try and replicate to some extent this year from the discussions I've had on part of the advisory board for that show, which hits in April this year.
Wow.
And I guess with the alternative events, it's quite interesting because they do target those larger firms, don't they? So it's not quite as broad brush as most of the other events insofar as they're catering for every accountant and bookkeeper in the market. They are literally going after top 200 firms. So you end up with a different type of event, different type of medium in terms of what's discussed and topics of interest.
You do that. But before...
Much more cerebral by the sound of it.
That's why Ryan and I go.
I'm not sure cerebral is quite the right definition, but it's a different kind of discussion.
And a massive jolly. A massive jolly, but very cerebral. Because you're able to... It's not just a consumption of content. What I understand from what you guys say is that it's a furthering of groupthink that like allows you to come together and then evaluate different approaches and try new things on. I don't think you can get that in the other events, or I haven't seen it in the other events.
No, I'd agree. I think for me, it's quite strategic. You get to hear from larger firms doing typically reasonably cutting edge things, or at least you're quite openly talking about some of the challenges that they're facing and trying to fix. Whereas I think with the other events, what you tend to hear from is very much the cutting edge firms, but they tend to be smaller firms in our marketplace. So some of that doesn't always scale up if you're working for a larger firm.
So it's a good one for large firms. Okay, so that's a tick then, because you guys are mid-market. And so we're putting that in the in a good category. We can't name which category yet because Ryan will tell me off. And then we've got DAS, right?
No, yep. Before then, we've got the Festival of Accounting.
Oh, Fab. Yes. Yeah, Fab. I have lined up already.
Are you going to Fab, Ryan, or are you on holiday again?
I don't actually know. I've not checked that one. I think I'll put it in my diary. I think it's probably in my diary. It's a long way to go, isn't it? I'm used to just the London events. They're just around the corner for me. Got to go all the way out to Birmingham for this one. Is that right? Is it Birmingham?
Yeah, it is Birmingham, at the NEC, yeah.
And that's
causing me a challenge trying to find a pre-event to put on at the NEC.
Why do you say that? Because, John, Birmingham is not some sort of bumpkinville where they don't have anything. There are plenty of things that you can do in the West Midlands.
Not by the NEC.
No,
there's literally a train station and an airport, and that's it.
Yeah, it's the location of the venue rather than the actual...
What, I mean, we could go for a curry. That's what you should do in Birmingham, right?
God, accounting there. You've really snookered us there, guys. Couldn't you just consider our pre-event?
Although you mentioned snooker, and we've not done snooker yet, John.
That's true.
We should do darts. That's what we should do.
Why don't we just get a dartboard? A few dartboards.
Set it up on the side.
And then just play Winter's Door.
On the side of the building. Going to be loving that.
How about we save money and we just go to the local Decathlon store, and then we can just go and ride bikes and scooters and play with the basketball hoops and all sorts of stuff, because that's what I do when Jess is a bit bored. Just take her there for an hour.
Wow.
Sorted.
I'm not sure many of the people in the industry will turn up for that, but maybe if you want to, then reach out to John, because he's clearly your guy for that. I'm not sure I could probably enjoy that as much. I don't mind just dartboard, side of the building. So long as
side of the building, well, outside.
Lamborghini bottle.
I mean, it's better than the train and plane spotting I'd suggested.
Oh, not a bad idea. That's what you do a lot of that in the West Midlands. That's true.
Bring your flask.
Jesus. Look, anyway, getting away from train and plane spotting, a little bit later in April, we have the Digital Accountancy Show. And I'm really looking forward to this one because I couldn't go last year. The one where it's now, there's lasers. That's sold to me.
Like Dr. Evil.
Just like Dr. Evil. And we are also organising an event at the Digital Accountancy Show. Can't really give too much information yet on what that'll be like, but should be interesting. Yeah, hopefully in the middle of the show. So not quite a pre-event, but a during event.
Yeah.
I mean, we might have a pre-event or an event pre-event.
Oh my God.
I'm looking forward to Digital Accountancy Show for one reason alone, and that's because they've changed the format to 2 days, and I'm really interested to see how they make that work, because I thought Digital Accountancy Show as a one-day event was really good. It was perfect. And they had the weather was great as well, and the whole event space worked really well. I know there were some issues talking to some of the vendors in terms of layouts and little bits and pieces, but I felt that as a compact single-day event, smash and grab, done, dusted, I thought it was brilliant. So I think Dan's pretty brave moving to 2 days, and I think it's going to be interesting to see how he makes that work. There's no end of content that he can use to fill those 2 days. I'm absolutely certain of that. But it does mean that he's now competing on a par with Accountex and Fab and ZeroCon, and just having a single-day event did actually set him apart from the rest of the space.
It was nice and efficient, wasn't it? He managed to get all of the talks in, but I do think that because you were spreading yourself so thin, trying to listen to certain people, that if you missed something, it felt like an opportunity lost. If you're a vendor there, you really want to make sure that you're connecting with as many people as possible. So the content warrants it. But as you said, then it's a real cost. You've got to evaluate, okay, which days do I want to stay overnight for? And use my matripuntos, as they say it in Spain, right? Your marital points to then stay away for the night and not have to take care of the kids.
Out of all the shows, which ones would we bed, buy, or bin? Let's go to you, Indy. Which ones would you want to jump into bed with?
I think I've always been a diehard get in the bed since he started in this industry with DAS and Digital Accountancy. So that one's definitely my bed. If I was like you in mid-market accountancy, I'd do alternative events, because I think it gives you something completely different from the other events that you go to. And then So I've chosen two for bed. And then I will
say... You can't choose two for bed, Indy. You have to pick one for bed.
What? That's so unfair. Oh, my gosh.
There's no threesomes
right,
in this.
It's fine. Digital accountancy. Sorry. You pushed me into a corner there, Ryan. Then buy, I would say, you can't have two because I would have like at least two for buy as well. Damn.
No.
Okay. Buy, then I have to say AccountX because we want to do the walk around and they always have super good content. I don't want to alienate either one of QuickBooks or Xero. I would buy them as well, but Ryan's being cruel, so I can't put you in that category. Sorry, you're not allowed to win in that category. And then I would bin, which one's left? Oh gosh, I have to bin Fab because you're going to make me go into a car park with a dartboard and a Lamborghini bottle, and I don't want to do that.
You seemed to go out for it a second ago. What about yourself, John? Bed, buy, or bin?
She did seem well up for it. So I think I'd bin QuickBooks Connect because we're not really a big QuickBooks partner and we never get invited. Damn you, Intuit. I think I would buy alternative events because I do really enjoy that in terms of the strategic opportunities that presents for the firm and definitely of interest to me in terms of what we're trying to do from a technology and digital sort of strategy point of view. And I would... bed. Oh gosh. I think I'd bed ZeroCon actually, because I think that's probably one of the funnest events that happens every year, the after party and stuff. I do love the other events as well, but yeah, if I'm going to be pushed to choose, then I think that's where I'm heading at the moment.
And so, who was your bin?
QuickBooks Connect.
That was it. I remember that.
Yeah, or whatever you call it. Get connected.
National Grid,
get connected. Or something like that. Open Reach, get connected. I don't know, whatever it is.
I think it's their new terminology because they were doing it around the country. So yeah. I think this is their big one for the year.
Maybe they're going to get into renewable energy because no one can get that connected, can they?
I mean, they are green. It makes sense.
Yeah.
I think from my perspective, I would get into bed with the alternative events because they literally provide a bed. So that would be pretty easy for me. Just fall into it at the end of the show. I'd buy Digital Accountancy Show purely because I think it's a great investment. It is growing year on year. And I think that I've been involved since its inception, love what Dan's doing, and always love being a part of that. What would I bin? I'm going to actually be quite controversial. I think I'd bin ZeroCon, and that's purely because I didn't really enjoy it as much last year. I'm hoping that I actually prefer it at the Excel, and I did say that to them, so I'm hoping it comes back with a bang, and I really enjoy it. But if I'm basing it on last experience, that was the one I probably... it didn't meet expectations, so that's what I landed. I landed on binning.
That makes sense, yeah. And between all of us, we're pretty much on the advisory boards of all of the events happening this year, apart from ZeroCon, as far as I'm aware. So that makes it quite entertaining. And I think we're probably speaking at most of the events as well, aren't we?
Probably, yeah. But that's another reason to bin it, because we're not on the advisory boards.
True. I'm definitely speaking at Fab, AccountX, Digital Accountancy Show, alternative events, and I'm speaking at Engage as well, which is in the States the week before ZeroCon. So that's going to keep me very
Yes, busy. John, we know you speak a lot. That's the one thing we can take from this.
Thanks again for listening to the Digitals in a Cruel World podcast. We hope you've enjoyed the resurrection of the pod over the last few months in 2023. We will, as I said at the beginning, be back for 2024. And please do take the opportunity to write a review, download the pod, anything that you think would help us with our stats and everything else, because it's all about a numbers game in this world. We also would like to thank the sponsors that are involved with the digital disruptors and everything else that goes around this. And 2024 is going to be a great year for the accounting space, technology as well, and hopefully for us. And we look forward to seeing you over the next few months, events and various other things that will be happening. Marvelous.